avenues open to both candidates at that stage.
And what's the bottom? Your analysis is, I'm fascinated by it and listening to it intently.
Yes.
Right? And the detail is incredible. What's the bottom line?
Well, the bottom line is, and he's just sat down and joined us, so, is that
Thomas, you have to be careful what you say, Dad.
Well, no, I'll say that anyway. But no, Thomas Pringle is sitting with a candidate 5 miles west of him and 8 miles east of him. And they have a massive chunk of votes. And any candidate would give his eye tooth to be sitting in the middle of them, knowing well that they will be eliminated. And this is single transferable vote, and the votes will transfer. So I anticipate that Thomas Pringle will actually take the fourth seat.
Fourth seat?
Yes.
And fifth?
The fifth, as I see it, based on what I was going through there, crudely, is a battle between the two Charleses and Charlie.
Jeepers. That'll be fascinating. And
well, the rest may not agree with me now. I don't know.
No, but I mean, I'll ask John Campbell in a second if he does agree with you. But Thomas Pringle is an outgoing TD. He's an independent TD. You're based down there in Killybegs. We were chatting to your son earlier on, and we had a good long chat with him.
I heard that. I didn't hear myself. I was only traveling my way over, so I couldn't hear it myself at that time.
No, he spoke very well. And he talked about the campaign. They're saying it's like a 3-week campaign, but I guess it was a longer campaign than that. In reality, you're talking about months, or maybe in when you're an independent, you're probably always campaigning.
Yeah, you have to be always conscious of that there's going to be an election at some stage. But the problem is then, because you're a small campaign and you're limited resources, you can't go out canvassing all the time either, because you don't want to burn people out and wait for an actual campaign to start. It does feel like it feels like months and months ago since we went out to canvass on the first day. And I think
months ago, well, or no,
it feels like it.
Feels like
it wasn't actually that, but I think we started campaigning on the weekend before Halloween, and then we started actually canvassing in like, it just seems like a long time.
And it's always an uphill struggle, I guess. Like you've got kind of a reputation now for getting into scraping in or whatever, but does it feel different this time, or does it feel the same as the last time?
I feel slightly different. I mean, I think when we were out knocking on the doors and stuff like that, the recognition and stuff like that, there was an awful lot higher than
better.
It had been before. I think that stands you in terms of transfers and stuff like that there. You know, so I would expect that we would transfer very strongly right across the board. And I'm hoping we will at this stage, but I think we will. And I think Brendan was probably right when he was saying about John McNulty and Noel Jordan. That's when they went, we'd benefit exceptionally from them as well too. And that's down to the work that we've done and the team have done in terms of campus and stuff like that there. And that's vitally important too, you know.
And not that you'd blow your own trumpet, but is it particularly difficult to campaign and to try and get elected as an independent where you don't have a big party machine behind you? I mean, is it a particularly tough challenge?
Well, it's tough in terms of getting the resources and being able to cover the area. Like, I mean, Donegal's a big county, as we all know. And, you know, when you're trying to canvass, and there's many parts of Donegal that we didn't get to canvass in. And that's the reality of the situation. That's because you have a small team. But, I mean, my team worked so tirelessly and so hard. And
how many did you have in the team?
Well, altogether, probably we had... There would have been the guts of about 25 or 30 people would have went out at different times.
The core.
But there would have been a core then probably of about 12 or 14 would have been out all the time, like, you know. Yeah. And that's a huge amount of commitment from them, you know, and it's a great tribute to them that we're here. And hopefully we'll take a seat. And I think it might be the fourth seat. So that's grand. And that's a tribute to all the campaign workers that I've had and the great work that they've done, and they're doing that because they want to and they enjoy it and they believe in an independent voice as well in Donegal and for Donegal, and that's all important.
And unlike the past, does it feel strange when you hit this invisible wall at Lahey and you can't go down and you can't go past Lahey?
Yeah, well, you have to get used to it very quickly, because when you're limited resources, you don't want to be canvassing areas that can't vote for you.
Yeah, exactly.
that's definitely for sure there. Yeah, look, I mean, and that's more so for the people beyond that, Ballintara, Rosnaula, and Bundoran, Ballyshannon, and stuff like that, you know, that feel that they don't have representation or don't have county-wide representation. And that, I think that's something that needs to be looked at in the future to try and get that resolved. But it's going to require a constitutional referendum for that to happen. And we'll have to see what happens in relation to that, whether there's any appetite to put forward a referendum, which I doubt very much that there will be.
And would you have had, I mean, I know you're an independent, but we're hearing that Marion Harkin might be in danger in the Sligo Leitrim constituency. That you, you don't think so?
I didn't realise. Apologies.
No, I think that she might be in danger of losing her seat. That's what we're thinking anyway. Isn't that right, Ronan? I think it's still the case.
Yeah.
He agrees.
The strange thing when you're here, Thomas, we're all in a bubble here. We don't know what's happening outside.
I'm in my own bubble as well, which is even worse.
You
would have known her, would you? Like, you work with her, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, well,
I mean, I know just because she's an independent doesn't mean you have an allegiance.
No,
but I'm asking you if you have any insight into why that might have happened.
Actually, to be honest with you, I have no insight into it at all, and I wouldn't know anything about outside of Donegal. And that's true. Like, I mean, the last 4 or 5 weeks, you've just been focused entirely on the constituency. I wouldn't know what's happening nationally. That I was surprised that Marion Harkin would be in bother.
Yeah.
That would be a surprise.
It is a surprise, isn't it?
Like Marion would have been part of that and through the bit. For the last 5 years.
But you wouldn't have worked closely with her per se?
No. We would have been in a technical group that shared speaking time and stuff like that there, and that's what we'd been there, and that's an arrangement to make sure you can maximise the time that you have.
And what's that independent group you're in?
The independent group?
The independent group. Yeah. And
that's the independent group.
No, that's
another group.
An independent group. And then I can't remember what the names of them are.
But come here.
I'm boggled about them too.
The reason I'm asking is because is it in any way in contention to potentially, being willing to form a government, say, with Sinn Féin?
No, you see, the grouping that we had was for Dáil speaking time and Dáil functions. Like, I mean, Michael Fitzmaurice was a member of that group as well, and now he's in Independent Ireland. And then Michael McNamara was a member of the group, and he was elected to Europe, so he's gone from the group. So myself and Catherine Connolly and Joan Collins would have been kind of the most closely aligned of the members of that group, the three of us.
And would you be willing to join an existing independent group that would be willing to perhaps form a government with Sinn Féin? In other words, would you be willing to change your direction a little bit as an independent in order to get rid of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael?
If that was possible, yes, I would.
You would be willing to do that? I would. And do you think that's a possibility?
I don't know, based on the figures and that, we have to see what the figures are coming out of.
I mean, I'm basing it on the exit poll figures from last night at 10 o'clock, But like, yeah. You're not ruling anything out in that regard, anyway.
No, I think for in terms of progress for Ireland, we do need to get rid of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and it would be the best outcome that we could have.
But the people don't agree.
No, that's the beauty of elections. You know, the people have agreed.
But are you surprised they don't agree? That all of the criticism that we hear throughout the campaign about, everyone's moaning about the cost of living or housing and the health system. And that's all we hear about all the time. But then when it comes down to the crunch.
But if you look at over the last 20 years in Ireland, what we have is an individualization of society, where basically every person is on their own and every person can look out for themselves. And I think you see that reflected then in the vote for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, because that really has been a vote for people that are doing okay, and people, and there is a proportion of people within our society that are doing okay, and they're the people who aren't homeless, who aren't dependent on council houses, who aren't dependent on the public health service, and that there's a proportion of those people.
But those people who are doing okay must be very willing to vote.
Yeah, they voted for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael.
I know, but you know what I mean. Like, they're not lethargic about saying, "Well, look, everything's okay. I won't even bother voting." I mean, if that's the case, which I'm sure you're right, they obviously are good voters.
They're good voters.
And
I mean, it's no mistake, and there's no coincidence that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael concentrate on the pensioners and stuff like that there when it comes to voting. Because you can see the statistics are there to prove it. Like, 18 to 25-year-olds, they might have a huge number of those when they're polled, actually support Sinn Féin, but a very small proportion of those actually vote. And that's the reality of the situation, where people over 65, probably 95% of them vote. And that's why Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael tailor their policies towards those people, that they can be sure that they'll go out and vote.
And do you think anyone will be, any party or any individual, any independent, will be able to target that 18 to 25-year-old to motivate them? Or I don't know how they would do it, because we've been talking about it all day, but what a massive What a massive vote they have. If yeah. they were, I was, we were saying it earlier on. I know loads of them. They're not even registered to vote. Like, could you imagine if someone like yourself or a, or one of the main parties or anyone was able to mobilize that vote? Jeez, yeah, that would be unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about it. You know, the feeling for 18 to 25 year olds and a certain proportion of 25 to 30 year olds feel that politics has no relevance in their lives. And you know, and what you have to do is show the people. You know, if you're attending school, if you're attending university, you know, Susie grants, accommodation, all that politics makes a difference to all those things. And you have to make sure that people get that message out across and get that to young people to actually show them the value of their vote.
Now, Fianna Fáil leader Micheál Martin has just been elected on the first count after topping the poll in Cork South Central, and so it's about getting them aware of how important it is. I mean, that's a big task. I mean,
it's also about, so I suppose, probably showing that there is an alternative as well too. Like, you know, and a lot of people feel that, you know, that maybe their vote won't make any difference or that they're as well too, and so therefore they don't use their vote. And I always say, like, I mean, the very first election that I stood in, if 9 people had voted for the Fianna Fáil candidate instead of me, I wouldn't have been elected. And that's how fine-tuned it can become. And you'll see even through the count here, it develops too as well. Like, I mean, it'll come down to very small margins and very small number of the votes, and that can make a difference. And that's what people need to see, that and they see that and understand that, maybe then they might see the value in their own vote as well.
And apart from the 18 to 25 year olds, what's the other major cohort of society that don't vote? Because we have a very low turnout. You know, when I say very low, it's not a great turnout. I don't know how it'll end up nationally, but it'll be lower than 60, you reckon? Well, I mean, it'll be lower than the last time.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know for definite on this, but I mean, I think that when you take the amount of on the register, the people that shouldn't be on the register, as the percentage figures, I think, you know, you're looking at a 50% turnout. I think in reality, that's probably the 70, 75% really? Turnout. Yeah, I think so, because the registers are after.
Well, we've got Brendan Byrne here.
Well, down in deep state Georgia, they try to take people off the register all the time. I don't think that's what you're talking about.
No, but I'm talking about death.
Yeah, the accuracy of the register.
People and people who've emigrated and stuff like that there. You know, that they...
Well, look, I think in fairness to Thomas, he's on a very valid point. The registers, since we started going into politics, Thomas, has never been accurate.
Yeah.
There's people left on, they're dead. People that left on, they're removed. And there's people not on. Yeah. So the whole accuracy, but we don't have a system of register.
Maybe you think the turnout could be 70%?
Oh, no.
In reality?
No.
I think it could be.
That would be unreal, wouldn't it?
Well,
it's true.
It'd be very interesting to have a look for somebody, either the electoral commission or somebody like that there, to actually look at the register.
And while they're at it, they could look at changing Donegal back to Donegal.
No, that won't happen. That won't happen without a referendum.
That's maths.
And it won't happen without a referendum.
It's bad maths if it is. It's very bad maths. Because the people feel very disjointed about it in places like Bundoran and Ballyshannon, when they're voting for candidates that they've never and an area that they don't relate to.
Absolutely.
You know, Donegal has its own football team.
Look at
it has its own clubs. It has its own culture within.
We're 100% with you on the emotion, but the guidelines, there's no emotion.
But the emotion is important.
You're getting very emotional about it. And I'm concerned about you.
you could equally, I suppose, argue that people in Carlow, Kilkenny shouldn't have to vote for a Kilkenny person, and somebody in Sligo, Leitrim shouldn't have to vote for somebody from Sligo, from Leitrim. And you know, and that's unfortunately what was required to make Donegal.
But I think Galway has its own constituency, doesn't it?
No, there's Galway. There's two constituencies in Galway: Galway East and Galway West. And part of
Roscommon
and part of Mayo was in Galway West the last time, and it's not this time. And you know, so that's basically what you would need to do. You would need to have a constitutional referendum, and then you would also need to get Donegal to be a single constituency. The amount of representation in the Dáil would need to have to go up to maybe about 190, 200 seats. And nobody's going to agree to that. That's the reality of the situation. I mean, if you said they went to the Irish people and said, look, we want to grow the number of TDs up to 200, they would say, you must be fucking mad.
No, it would never go through. So it looks like you're in Sligo for some time, Jerome.
Yeah.
Well, it looks like you don't seem too upset about it, but I think there has to be a solution.
I feel your pain every minute of the day. But
there
I'm
has to be a solution. It's one of the large. I think it's the third largest county in Ireland.
I'm thinking of renting a room to you, actually, and then you can register in my house.
Where is it?
In Carrick.
Oh, in Carrick. Well, I might take you up on that. It might come sooner than you think, the way interest rates are going and my mortgage is going. But it makes a fair, we'll have to examine that in the future. But you're confident anyway, Thomas, of the fourth seat. And what's your, just, we haven't asked you about anything else in terms of the other, like, it, do you think Charlie McConnellogue is safe enough at this stage, or what's your analysis of it? Because you're down having a look at it.
Yeah, well, I mean,
earlier on, it didn't look good at all.
I was just looking, just from talking to my own team, and that I think it's going to become between Charlie McConnellogue and
Charles Ward
for the last seat. And I think the problem that Charlie McConnellogue has is where he's going to get transferred from.
Would you like to see him lose the seat? I know you don't want to be nasty or personal, but would you like to see him lose the seat?
Well, I think it would be better for the overall country that Fianna Fáil would go down to having one representative in Donegal, and whether that's Charlie McConnellogue or Patrick Hope. I think it'd be it's better overall to see that we get to the end of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael closer.
And what about, I think you were in Sinn Féin at one stage, weren't you?
Yeah, I've been in politics for 24, 25 years. Yeah. I was in Sinn Féin for three of them. So yeah it was.
Do you still have any feelings a wee bit? No, but I mean, when you see...
It actually proved to me that political parties are no good for anybody.
Yeah.
And
if you were to fall out of bed and you had to fall into some political party, it would be Sinn Féin.
I would retire from politics. But I wouldn't fall into any political party.
Are you surprised by the support they have? I mean, Piers Doherty and Pádraig McLoughlin, that's some vote, isn't it?
That's a big vote.
Are you surprised?
Not really, no.
Why do you think it is? Do you think it's the promising the 100% redress?
No, I don't think so, because I mean, I think Sinn Féin didn't promise 100% redress when they had the opportunity to in the public meeting in Buncrana a number of months ago. And the reality is, I mean, the people see that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, we had the Fine Gael redress scheme that was rubbish. We have the Fianna Fáil redress scheme now, which is slightly less rubbish. So there is a need for a proper redress scheme to actually make sure that people can repair their houses and repair them properly. And we're going to have a huge problem that's going to come in the next couple of years. And it's starting already in terms of childcare facilities, public buildings. The building we're here now at the minute is even apparently have got to make a problem too, you know. And that's going to become, and that is down to Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael policies over the last number of years. And that is squarely at their foot. This has got to do with self-regulation of the building industry, which was brought in by Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael over the years, and that's where the problem lies. And unfortunately, this doesn't look like it's going to be resolved at any stage shortly, soon.
And if you get the call and some way you see a path to get into government, you'd be willing to do it, more than happy to do it. And do you feel, you're in Killybegs, you're still based there, do you feel... Like, if you look at the fishing industry, they feel let down as well. Is it very difficult to bring about change as an independent? Do you feel like you're able to? I mean, you talk strong on so many issues, which is fair enough, like the 100% redress. And probably now you say that you support the fishing industry, which I'm sure is true. But is it very hard to make a real impact as an independent, just as a sole independent?
No, I don't think so. If you look at the Dáil and how the Dáil performs now, I mean, the government doesn't get away with stuff like it used to before, and they don't. Nothing that the government does goes without any scrutiny, and I think that's vitally important. And we need to have that scrutiny to make sure that people know what's actually going on and know that the government isn't getting away with stuff all the time. The problem with the fishing industry has is that the fishing industry has been neglected by every successive Irish government since we joined the European Union. Indeed, when we actually were negotiating to join the European Union, the Europeans told the Irish government that there would be no negotiations if they wanted to talk about fishing. And that's where it all started from, and we've led on from that. And we still have a situation where government ministers, no matter who they are, will not support the fishing industry. You have the officials in the department view Irish waters as European waters, not as Irish waters. And that is the problem. And until we have a government that is supportive of the fishing industry, we will never change that.
Yeah. Are you pro-EU? I mean, I know you're talking about a very specific issue, but would you be pro-European Union or?
I think the European Union has been good for Ireland in certain things, but I mean, I think that when we joined the European Union knew what we were bringing to the table. We didn't. And they've got more than the value of and fish alone out of Irish waters. And I don't believe that the European Union has been about growing Ireland and looking after Ireland. I think the European Union has been about taking our resources and using them for their own ends. And we've been handed a sop to change it with structural funds and stuff like that. And then Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael go along with that and they buy into that and they say that we should be thankful for what we're getting and which we shouldn't be.
Did you ever run for European Parliament?
No.
You didn't? No interest? Or
no, I was just... no interest. Now, unfortunately, Ming has me down as his substitute. So I'm hoping that Ming will be there for time. Yes, I certainly don't want to be going as a substitute over the European Parliament.
What does that mean to me if, well, God forbid, something happened to him?
If God forbid if anything happened to him, or if Ming ran for president and was elected president, well then I would have
you'd
to
be in.
I would
and
have
do you
to
think
be
he could vote. Become president? That'd be some.
I think he would give it a good shot.
And do you think we're well represented over there? Obviously, you're going to say Ming does a good job, but do you think we're well representative in Europe? Because we're criticizing.
I think Ming does a good job.
Yeah, but we're criticizing when you talk about the EU and its role, with the fishing thing and all that. And I know. Probably what you're saying is it should have been the Irish government before certain things happened. They should have influenced what was being agreed at that stage. But yeah, I mean, I'm not sure.
The European Parliament has a certain role in terms of European policy and stuff like that there. But the major role at European decision making is the Council of Ministers and as the Commission.
Yeah.
And the Irish government is represented directly on there. So the European Parliament, more and more over the last number of years, can take a role and can have some influence, but it doesn't have the majority of influence. And when Europe makes decisions, it's not the European Parliament that makes those decisions. It's the Council of Ministers and the Commission that makes those decisions. And Irish ministers will go and sit on the Council of Ministers and negotiate on that on our behalf. And the reality is that Ireland has given up on the fishing industry to ensure that they look after other things.
Brendan Byrne, you know a wee bit about this.
Yeah,
well, tell us why first, if you don't mind. Is that okay?
I'm the chief executive of the Irish Fish Processors and Exporters Association for the last 4 years. Look, part of what Thomas says is accurate. Others, it's kind of overly simplified. When we joined the EEC, as it was in 1973, we were a very underdeveloped nation when it came to fishing. And then at critical points along that pathway in 1976 with the expansion of our EEZ, and in 1983, when quotas were set based on the track record from 79 to 83, we were a developing country in many ways. In terms of fishing, when you compare us directly to France and the Netherlands and Germany and Denmark, and later then in 1986, the Spanish and Portuguese arrived. So we had, from 73 particularly to 83, we didn't realize the potential of what we had, which was what Thomas has correctly said, nor did we have the policies to back up to protect our interests going forward. So basically, the quotas that you have in Kittybegs or in Greencastle or Castletown Bear now are based on a figure that was submitted by our department in 1983. They've only gone up and down on the basis solely of scientific advice since that. And that is locked in under the relative stability key. And when we submitted our catch estimates from 79 to 83, we submitted the bona fide catch estimates. France submitted theirs and multiplied it by 300%. The Dutch did likewise. And they outmaneuvered us. Now, is that a political criticism? Most likely. Is it an administrative and public service criticism? Yes. We just were outmaneuvered and outnegotiated. And who would have anticipated a policy that came in 1983 would never be changed to this present day? So if you look at the Eurostat figures, every member state, coastal member state of the EU, in the Eurostat figures for fish processing and fish producing is increasing. Ireland since 2017 is on a downward trajectory to such a point that the sector I'm representing has fallen by 66% in the last two calendar years, where viability is now on the line. We're beyond the point that we're not viable. So we're hoping a change of government emphasis, at least to give us a designated junior minister or super junior. We have to have political focus. In the 4 years that I've been here, the most frustrating thing I have witnessed is, even yet at a critical time when we're going down the toilet in fishing, we still haven't changed how we engage at European level, how we engage with the European Commission, and how our department has functioned. if you're making a mistake in life, don't repeat the mistake and keep repeating it. You have to change your trajectory. And, you know, if you look at it, it's an industry that should have a strategy for 10 years to double in size and growth.
Not go down by 60-odd%
in
over
2 calendar years.
Well, it's a tough, and you're looking for you're looking for a government to come in and a dedicated minister. But do we have Minister for Marine?
Not since 2014.
No. Minister for Marine?
Yeah, that was the last Minister for Marine in 2013, actually. And since then, you have a Minister for Marine that's part of a Ministry for Food and a Ministry for Agriculture.
Yeah.
So if you're in those three departments, agriculture is going to take the bulk of your time because we have 400,000 farmers and family farms. And then food is food production and all this. And marine, unfortunately, in Ireland, has become a 1.3 billion industry. Now, in terms of agriculture, it's a small, but significantly in Donegal, it still is responsible for 16% of the overall employment in Donegal, fishing directly and indirectly, ancillary and service sector. So it's still a big employer in Donegal. Cork Southwest would be another constituency in which is a good employer of the fishing industry. But